You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down to earth.
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja.
We love the earth.
It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Friday, September 29th, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. We made it to the weekend, and we made it through another month. Can you believe the fourth quarter of 2017 is about to start? We're heading into October. Got to get the Halloween costumes ready, the decorations, all that's coming up. I'm telling you, time is flying as we legalize marijuana, isn't it? And speaking of time, one of the nice things about doing this show live on the Pacific Coast is that I get to report on the Friday evening data dump. Usually what happens over there in Washington, D.C., when they want to break a story that they don't want to get a whole lot of attention about. And I've got some of that breaking news for you right now, reported from the Washington Post just about an hour ago. The Secretary of Health and Human Services, Tom Price, has resigned. If you've been following the news, you know there's been a scandal regarding his use of chartered jets funded by the taxpayers at the tune of $400,000 and a military flights to Africa, Europe, and Asia that cost more than $500,000. In response, Price said he'd write a check for the cost of his seat, $51,000. That's wow. Thanks, buddy. So with all of this scandal and his response to it, he's now decided to resign. And this is good news in the sense that Tom Price has been a longtime opponent of marijuana reform. He's consistently voted against the Rohrabacher Amendment in the House. He's voted against letting veterans get access to medical cannabis. So good riddance to this guy. Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you. All right, let's get to today's show. We are featuring the Marijuana Policy Insider segment today. We got Morgan Fox, the communications director from the Marijuana Policy Project, joining us today to talk about the latest federal data releases from the National Survey on Drug Use and Health on cannabis use in America and the FBI's Uniform Crime Report on marijuana arrests in America. Also, we get his opinion on the resignation of Chuck Rosenberg as head of the DEA. Plus, I'm going to rant some more on Woodstock weed.
This is your Cannabis Headline News, brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your Cannabis Headline News for Friday, September 29th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. Yesterday morning, BuzzFeed reported that retail giant Target was selling CW Hemp's Charlotte's Web CBD oil through its online portal. But less than 4 hours later, The Cannabist reported that the items were no longer available for sale at Target. In a statement emailed to The Cannabist on Thursday afternoon, a Target spokeswoman said, quote, "We started carrying Charlotte's Web hemp extract items last week on Target.com. After further review, we have decided to remove it from our assortment," end quote. The Cannabist made multiple attempts to contact officials at CW Hemp, but they have not commented directly about the product's removal from Target's website. While the BuzzFeed article claims, quote, "Charlotte's Web is a company from Colorado that makes products with hemp extract that is available in all 50 states, and, quote, it's also legal," end quote, the DEA has on numerous occasions reminded the public that cannabidiol is a Schedule I drug, illegal to possess and sell anywhere under federal law. Nevada sold $27 million worth of marijuana in the first month of legal sales, generating $3.6 million in taxes for the Silver State. The figures come from figures released Thursday by the Nevada Department of Taxation. That means Nevada has almost doubled the nearly $14 million first sales months posed by both Colorado and Oregon. Tourism is clearly a driving force in Nevada's marijuana sales, as the state's native population of 3 million is less than the 4 million in Oregon and the 5.5 million in Colorado. While Washington only generated 3.8 million in sales in its first month, it was hamstrung by a lack of stores. That factor, however, hasn't affected Nevada, which began legalization with just 37 stores, compared to Oregon's and Colorado's hundreds of stores. The state has also pulled in $6.5 million in marijuana license and application fees. 10 bills that a New Mexico judge says Governor Susana Martinez vetoed illegally during this year's legislative session, including a high-profile measure legalizing research on hemp, will become law after all. For now, at least. The Santa Fe New Mexican reports that State District Judge Sarah Singleton overturned the two-term Republican governor's vetoes last month, and this week denied a request by lawyers representing Martinez to stop the bills from becoming law while they consider appealing the ruling. The judge reversed the 10 vetoes because Martinez did not provide any explanation when she nixed the measures during an acrimonious stretch of the 60-day legislative session. The state constitution says a governor has 3 days to either sign a bill or veto it by returning the bill, quote, to the house in which it originated with his objections, end quote. The governor argued she acted within her authority, but Singleton agreed with the lawmakers. She decided that Martinez owed at least some sort of explanation when she vetoed the bills. Civil rights activist and MSNBC commentator Reverend Al Sharpton is helping launch a new marijuana law reform group called Decode Cannabis. In an op-ed published in The Guardian, Sharpton argues that, quote, decriminalization of marijuana is a civil rights cause, making the case that, quote, for Democrats and progressives, the arguments have always been clear, end quote, that prohibition decimated communities of color and diverted taxpayer money to, quote, a prison industrial complex built on a foundation of racism, end quote. Sharpton's cause is bipartisan, however, as he claims, quote, the conservative case for marijuana decriminalization is no less resonant, end quote, characterizing prohibition as, quote, wasteful government spending, and, quote, noting how prohibition arrests make families dependent on the charity of others, end quote. A new study shows that a drug called N-acetylcysteine, which had been shown to promote abstinence from cannabis use among adolescents, has no such effect when used on adults. In a 12-week trial with more than 300 cannabis-dependent adults, those treated with N-acetylcysteine submitted no more cannabis-free urine samples than those given a placebo. Researchers are seeking explanations for the contrasting results. One possibility, says Dr. Kevin Gray, who led both trials, is that the results reflect differences between adolescents and adults in cannabis exposure. Dr. Gray says, quote, we speculate that with more entrenched chronic and high-dose cannabis use, the bar necessary for treatment success may be higher, end quote. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Friday, September 29th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159-855.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
This is Marijuana Policy Insider, brought to you by the Marijuana Policy Project at MPP.org. MPP is the nation's largest marijuana policy organization, promoting sensible marijuana policy reform in Congress, in state legislatures, and through state and local ballot initiatives. Today, we take a look at the most recent state and federal reform efforts with the Marijuana Policy Insider.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Marijuana Policy Insider. I'm Russ Belville, and joining us today is the Communications Director for the Marijuana Policy Project. It's Morgan Fox this morning. Hi, Morgan. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm fantastic. You know, this is the time of year when we get all sorts of new data from the federal government, from surveys and crime reports, and we figured we'd bring an expert in here to discuss this. The first survey we'd like to talk about is the National Survey on Drug Use and Health. It's been conducted in the current form since 2002. And Morgan, what data do we get from this report that's good, bad, or indifferent to the marijuana community?
Well, I think that the biggest takeaway was that teen use rates did not increase over the past year. In fact, they're at the lowest point that they've been at since at least 2002. And now the decrease has been statistically insignificant, but I think that the big point is that it didn't increase like most opponents of legalization have been claiming that it would, saying that we're sending the wrong message.
Were there increases in marijuana use among any age groups?
Yes, actually. Adult use, particularly in the 18 to 26 range, has increased by a couple of percentage points, but you know, nothing that I think or that anybody of your listeners would think would be considering like a public health crisis or anything like that. And I think it's probably consistent with more adults realizing that you know, marijuana is objectively less harmful than many drugs, including alcohol, and having it be much more available to them in legal states.
Our opponents are making some hay out of that most recent statistic. They always like to say that brain development doesn't stop till age 25 and that legalization only begins at age 21, yet we see 18, 19, and 20-year-olds using marijuana more, at least according to this survey. Is that a cause for concern? Do you fear that that could lead to any sort of backlash in states that may be considering marijuana reform?
I don't really think so. I mean, given the fact that that age group doesn't break down any smaller, we don't really know what percentage of the increase is due to people that are under the age of 21 being able to legally access it in their own states. And it also doesn't include the fact that there are an increasing number of medical programs, which would make people answer yes to that question on the national survey, but wouldn't necessarily be considered anything negative. You know, it's just the fact that people in that age group do have access to medical marijuana in a number of states, and we're seeing more and more information coming out showing that it's helpful for a number of conditions. So it makes sense that that rate would go up as more knowledge about cannabis's medical benefits is learned.
In prior surveys, we've talked about the increase in the cannabis use rate among seniors, people over 50 or over the age of 65. Is that continuing to rise?
Yes, it is, although not as quickly as the 18 to 25 age group.
Let's talk about some of the other questions that get asked on the survey, particularly with regard to alcohol. One of our concerns or considerations when it came to legalization was the idea that marijuana is safer than alcohol. Do we see a substitution effect in this data? Do we see people switching from alcohol to marijuana?
Well, we do see a slight drop in alcohol use, but it's difficult to determine whether that's due to a substitution effect. However, it certainly suggests that it's a possibility.
How are the statistics looking for other drugs? I know the opioid crisis has generated a lot of headlines. Is the access to cannabis having any effect on any of these other stats?
Well, it looks like there were slight decreases almost across the board for all drugs. So I'm not sure if there's a causal effect there, but that's definitely a good sign considering the relative safety of cannabis compared to these other drugs.
Are there any other stats within the survey with respect to rehab or mental health or any other drugs you'd like to share with us?
Well, those are a little bit harder to parse out, but you know, we're hopeful that there are going to be a lot more treatment options available, both you know, as more money becomes available through the regulation of marijuana and taxation, but also through savings in resources due to the fact that we're not really arresting people anymore. We're also hoping that people will be more willing to seek treatment now that a lot of the stigma is starting to disappear, and that, you know, despite some of the posturing from the Department of Justice, most professionals seem to be moving in a direction of harm reduction philosophy.
All right, let's shift gears a little bit because another report has come out. This one's the FBI's Uniform Crime Report, which since 1970 has been a collection of the reported arrests
from law enforcement agencies all around the nation. And what do the numbers show us with respect to marijuana arrests?
Well, it appears as if marijuana arrests have actually gone up since last year. This particular year, they decided to strip out a lot of the very useful tables that would give us a pretty easy estimate of figuring out the percentage of the total drug abuse arrests that were caused by marijuana. But due to them changing that policy, but also due to reporting issues with various local and state law enforcement agencies, it can be difficult to determine exactly what the real total is, because some places still count citations, some places only submit drug abuse numbers, and they don't break it down by type of drug. But through extrapolation, it looks like it's about 10,000 more arrests than last year, which might not make a lot of sense considering that more and more states are making marijuana legal for adults, but kind of does make sense when you consider that both adult use rates are increasing and also that four of the states that passed legalization laws in November, those laws didn't even take effect until 2017. So the previous laws would have still already been in effect.
So then an increase in 10,000 may just owe to the fact that there are more people accessing cannabis, using cannabis regularly. That goes back to our survey numbers from the previous questions then.
Yes, absolutely. And again, there are a lot of rounding errors that could occur, and because of the odd reporting system that the FBI uses, it's really just an estimate. But the fact that we're still arresting around 650,000 people every year for marijuana is just insane.
Is there any consideration about this removal of the drug table, that it was motivated in any way to conceal what's going on with marijuana arrests, or is this just part of some larger paperwork reduction or something?
I mean, I don't think that it's necessarily meant to conceal things, but I wouldn't put it past them. I think that what was probably happening was that in previous years, there were close to 100 different data tables included in this report, and the FBI, I think, wanted to just make it a little bit easier to consume. They also weren't withholding that data. I mean, upon request, both myself and several other reporters covering this issue space were able to find the numbers. Figuring out exactly how to analyze them properly was another task. But I think that the information is still available upon request from the FBI. So I don't think that they're necessarily trying to hide it, but it does kind of make it, I mean, I would think that they would want that information to be as detailed as possible, given the fact that we are facing opioid epidemics right now, and there are a lot of changes in state marijuana laws that should be taken into account.
The arrests for drug abuse violations in the FBI UCR totaled over 1.5 million. It was the category for which most arrests happened in the United States. But what did we see with respect to other crime numbers or arrest numbers? And the point would be, is the legalization of cannabis having any effect on crime numbers in other ways?
Well, that's another thing where you have to really think about the difference between like causality and correlation. Changes in marijuana laws might be correlated with variances in other crimes, but it's very difficult to tell if it has a direct effect on them outside of a very local level, simply because there are too many variables to consider. I mean, everything from income levels to population growth or decline, unemployment rates, all of these things happen to affect various different crime rates. So it's tough to tell if there's any sort of a cause there. But what we do know is that law enforcement spends the vast majority of their time and effort on drug abuse violation arrests.
For our final topic in this segment, I wanted to have your comments on Chuck Rosenberg, the head of the DEA, who is reportedly resigning as of tomorrow, his position as head of the DEA. And there's supposedly a marijuana connection involved here, him being upset about the Department of Justice, Jeff Sessions' Department of Justice, refusing to move forward on applications for research cannabis growing. What are your thoughts about this act, and is Rosenberg somewhat of a marijuana hero now?
Well, I certainly wouldn't go that far. I mean, not so very long ago, he was quoted as saying that medical marijuana was a joke. However, I think that I was kind of surprised when I heard that he was complaining about the Department of Justice dragging their feet on approving additional applications. That might have just been a way to pass the buck and make it take some of the heat off of the DEA and show that they were actually doing their jobs as requested by Congress to grant more licenses for research and for research production and putting it at the feet of the DOJ. And the DOJ didn't say that they were obstructing it. They just said that they were being very careful, which you can take how you want. But it seems as if, at least in this administration, when you start complaining about your superiors, you're not long for the job. So it's possible that there were a lot of other issues involved, but the fact that that disagreement has been cited so often in all the coverage that I've seen about his departure should be enough to make people think. And it remains to be seen exactly how the potential replacement is going to be on this issue. I don't think that qualifications for the DEA really take top picks of people who have been extremely lax on drug policy enforcement or have urged its relaxing. But you never know. I mean, the times are changing.
They are indeed. Morgan Fox from the Marijuana Policy Project. Make sure, folks, that you log on to mpp.org and learn all about what's happening at the federal and the state level. All 50 states are included. And Morgan, thanks for your time. We appreciate your expertise.
Thanks for having me.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. If you're a cannabis brand looking to build trust and awareness within the community, consider becoming a sponsor of this program. Your message will be